Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's Dharma Talk is entitled Common Meditation Mistakes and Their Remedies by Marcus Casey. Do you sometimes get discouraged in your meditation practice? Do you struggle with consistency? In this talk, we dig into some common missteps we make in our meditation practice and how to get back on the right track. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karma Teksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Hello and welcome today. Thank you for joining. My name is Marcus Casey. I'm a volunteer meditation instructor here at Columbus KTC. We're glad to have you all with us. We are getting very excited about the building and the possibility of meeting in person as soon as it is possible and safe. But we also love that we now have a community that has even grown virtually, and we have people from a variety of places joining with us. So thank you all and welcome. It is our tradition to start our talks with the four-line refuge prayer. The prayer is in Tibetan, so if you don't know it, I think we're going to put it here on the screen, Listen and make the aspiration to awaken and help others to awaken. When we are chanting this, we are repeating our commitment to taking refuge in the three jewels: the Buddha, or the goal, what we aspire to, the Dharma, or the path, and the Sangha, our guides and companions on the path. I'll chant the refuge prayer three times. Sanje Chudang Zogi Chognam La Jang Chu Bardu Dagni Kapsu Chi Dagi Jin Sogi Pesu Nangi Jola Pinchir Sanje Chu Par Shu Sanje Chudang Zogi Chognam La Jam Chu Bardu Dagni Kapsu Chi Dagi Chin So Gi Pe Su Nam Gi Jo La Pin Chir Sam Je Chu Par Sho Sam Je Chu Dang So Gi Cho Nam La Jam Chu Bardu Dagni Kapsu Chi Dagi Jin So Gi Pe Su Nam Gi Jo La Pin Chir Sang Je Tu Par Sho. All right, thank you. So on many of my talks that I give, I feel unqualified to give them. I rely on the words of the great teachers of our lineage, and I am merely the messenger. I have no realization, no special wisdom. I just know who does, and so I pass along their teachings. But today I'm finally qualified on the subject, because today we are talking about the mistakes we make in meditation. I'm qualified because I've made all these mistakes. All credit for pointing out the mistakes goes to my teachers, but at least I can speak about the mistakes themselves from experience. And of course, all credit for the solutions go to my teachers and the great Buddhas and Bodhisattvas that have gone before. You know, when I first became a Buddhist, I thought my identity as a Buddhist came with it an expectation that I was an expert in meditation. And therefore, I felt like I should never get angry, that I was above the desire for material things. I put on myself the expectation that I was on the fast track to enlightenment. I don't know that I would have admitted to any of those thoughts, of course, but the spiritual path has a lot of pitfalls. I really could draw a map of the ones I've encountered so far. But hopefully, as we've been at it a while, we learn to look honestly at where we are. And that in itself can be very liberating. Some of us need to let go of the heavy burden of expectations that we carry. Sometimes that in itself can stand between you and your practice. So I'll say, starting out here, that this talk is intended to help rather than to criticize or cause guilt. That's not what we're about, and it would be counterproductive anyway. We're here today looking forward and hopefully learning from each other in the past. I'm so serious about this. I want us to pause a minute now to breathe and let go of any guilt that we may be feeling about our practice, any fear that we are failing, any competitiveness that may cause us to compare ourselves to others. So let's just take a moment to let go of all those negative emotions surrounding our practice so that we can address this with hopefully some humor and some honesty and look at our practice and see where we can make some tweaks. All right. Thank you. And for those of you whose practice is going very well right now, I encourage you to stick with us as well, because it may not always be so, and perhaps something that's said today will help you in the future. So let's jump into the list of common meditation mistakes that I put together here and see if we can't use our experience to help each other today. In Buddhism, we talk a lot about motivation. All our actions are motivated by thoughts, conscious or not. So the first thing we need to examine when looking at our meditation practice is our motivation. Why do we meditate? Meditation and more recently the mindfulness movement have really taken off in our society. Meditation is encouraged in schools, in doctor's offices, by fitness experts and corporate training, by therapists. It's everywhere now. And we are encouraged to meditate for better mental health, better physical health, better relationships, to help us sleep, to perform better at work, to be more present with our families. The ways society has begun to integrate meditation are many and varied. And I think it's fantastic. As Buddhists, we rejoice anytime someone finds relief from suffering in any measure. And our modern culture is such a constant buzz of activity, responsibilities, distractions. Meditation and mindfulness can help anyone. And we rejoice when people have greater success and health. We rejoice when students are better able to learn and handle their daily pressures. So I truly think it is an unqualified good thing that meditation is spreading so broadly in our society. But here at Columbus KTC, we really believe that there is more. The name KTC is made up of three words, karma, tegsum, chuling. And let's talk about that middle word, tegsum, a minute. Tegsum is a Tibetan word that refers to the three vehicles of the Buddha's teachings. Teg means vehicle and sum means three, meaning that the KTC teaches all three vehicles or yanas of Buddhism, Hinayana, Mahayana, and Vajrayana. And what distinguishes the first two of these vehicles, Hinayana and Mahayana, from each other is our motivation. The translation of Hinayana is smaller or lesser vehicle, whereas Mahayana means great vehicle. Basically, you can think of Hinayana as being a boat only big enough for one. And Mahayana is a boat vast enough to fit all beings. So many times when we begin this path, our motivation is that we ourselves are suffering. And we hear the talks about how to move beyond suffering and about how to meditate. And so we come looking for relief for that suffering. It's like we're holding this fiery coal and we need to learn how to let go of it. And it's an emergency. It's natural. And it's what the Buddha teaches. He teaches the end of suffering. So this is a great place to begin. We start out with the motivation to relieve our own suffering. And that's what many of the examples of meditation in our society are geared toward, ending our own suffering. We need to end the suffering of ill health, of stress, of mental difficulties, difficulty concentrating, what have you. But this is a vehicle built for one. It is just about our own suffering. If you're sitting down to meditate each day looking for relaxation and stress relief, you may find that. I really hope you do. But at some point, when you have found some relief for your suffering, it becomes time to move to the next step, adjusting your motivation toward ending the suffering of all beings. This is the Mahayana path, the Bodhisattva path. It's the great vehicle. So if you find yourself struggling with your practice, it may be that you are going to the cushion looking for some kind of immediate relief from something. And sometimes expanding that practice and opening up to an altruistic motivation may be exactly what is needed right now. Take your friends to the cushion with you in your mind. Take your enemies to the cushion with you. Take strangers to the cushion with you. Learn to bring all beings with you to your meditation and make that your motivation each time you practice. Your motivation practice doesn't just have to be about your own suffering. We can expand our practice simply by including all beings. When we are motivated to end suffering for all beings, we look not just for the end of suffering, but for full realization so that we can help as many beings as possible. So take a minute to reflect each time you start to meditate. What is your meditation? We often call it setting your motivation. Take a time as you sit down before you begin anything to look at your mind, look at your motivation, and create that motivation to end suffering for all beings. So take a minute right now and think about that. Think about what your motivation is each time you practice and whether or not maybe you're kind of caught in that trap of, whoa, I'm really stressed. I need to sit down and try to get some relaxation. And that being all that you're doing with your practice. So let's take a moment to just consider real briefly. All right, so next let's talk about expectations. What do we expect from our practice? Do you ever have times when you're just in the groove about anything, but you're just in the groove, you're really feeling it? It could be work or I don't know, sports, a hobby, whatever. It's just flowing. You know, you see professional athletes who just sometimes they can't do anything wrong. It just sometimes you're really feeling it. And we as meditators, have you ever had moments where you're just really feeling your meditation? You're just really very settled in your mind. Maybe it's a feeling of spirituality or spiritual power. Maybe you feel very empathetic and connected, very, you know, that compassion is just right there and very easy to tap into. Maybe you're having some sort of experiences when you sit down on the cushion. So do you think that all comes from your spiritual practice? Is it your karma? I don't know. Let's flip it around. Does your meditation ever feel blocked or like fruitless? It's pointless. You're going nowhere. Your mind is scattered. It won't settle down for anything. You're just having trouble feeling anything. You get discouraged. You lose your desire to meditate. You feel like a failure in your meditation. So let's ask the same question. Was that because of your lack of spiritual practice? Is that your karma? Maybe. Again. But I can also tell you that it's part of being human. We are not consistent day to day. This is not a completely linear path that will go up and up and up every time you sit down to meditate. So we need to learn to be realistic about where we are on the journey. Just because we've decided to call ourselves Buddhists and take on spiritual practices does not mean that we are suddenly spiritual superstars and have perfect meditation. When we get realistic with who we are and what we should expect from ourselves, we can recognize that there are more forces at play than just our spiritual progress. Maybe your ability to focus today depends on how well you've been sleeping or eating, or exercising. Maybe you're having trouble relaxing because of job stress, and the days you feel blocked are days when pressures are the highest. Maybe your meditation comes more easily on weekends because you're not constantly thinking about work when you sit down on the cushion. Does any of this sound like you? We mentioned in the earlier part about if you're sitting down just for relaxation, it's going to be very inconsistent. Sometimes it's going to really work for you, and other times you may find when you're finished, you're just as stressed as you were when you sat down. And so I think this points to a misunderstanding of what meditation is and what you should expect from your meditation. Now, don't get me wrong, meditation has many, many benefits, and some of them can be very immediate. Meditation long-term really works to weaken our negative mental states, and some kinds of meditation help us to actually uproot the cause of our negative mental states, our ego clinging. But none of this is going to happen overnight. And because of our condition as humans, the way we feel doing it is going to be a zigzag path. It is not going to be completely linear and straight. So if we approach our practice expecting absolute consistency, where each day we are better at it than the day before, we're going to be disappointed. And that's kind of an extreme case. You may not quite have that rigid of an expectation. But generally speaking, any kind of short-term expectations that you have on meditation may work out for a little while, but then they can disappoint. So when you have unrealistic expectations and then you get disappointed, the tendency is to give up or at least get discouraged. Maybe it isn't so much about the inconsistency. Maybe it's more of an attachment to feelings. How many of us have just a really stellar meditation or a meditation experience, and immediately we become attached to the feelings we experienced? I remember one time when Kimpo Garcher Rinpoche came to teach, and it was a beautiful teaching. It was a beautiful weekend. Mm-hmm. And the last day, I could not have been more spiritually full. But the next day, things in my personal life, really, some things happened, and things started snowballing, and I went through a very, very difficult time. And during that time, I had that memory of Rinpoche's teaching and what it felt like to be there that day. And yes, I was trying to recreate that particular day, that moment, that practice. But the circumstances of my life were night and day different than they had been on that day. So that all gets to the point that your feelings are impermanent. And what does the Buddha say about getting attached to things that are impermanent? It's the cause of suffering, right? And that's no less true if the impermanent object of our attachment is the feelings we get from meditation than it is if it's a material object or something. The thoughts in our minds are like waves in the ocean. They appear and disappear with amazing frequency. Here in a flash, gone in a flash. Our thoughts are impermanent. Our brains and our bodies are impermanent. And we are riding the tumultuous waves of impermanence while trying to relax and center ourselves. It's not easy at all. And sometimes when the waves of our thoughts are high and tumultuous, we sit to meditate, and it's very, very difficult to separate from that. Other times, we happen to be relaxed and peaceful even before we sit down to meditate. Maybe we, just had a massage or a morning cup of coffee just got back from vacation. I don't know. The point is, if we look at how we feel, we are going to be confused about our practice. We ultimately could end up being a very fickle practitioner, and we may give up. So practice letting go of expectations from each meditation session. As you sit down and set your motivation at the beginning of each session, also take a minute to let go of any expectation from that session. As you dedicate the merit at the end of the meditation, be confident that your positive motivation and your practice generated virtue, even if you did not have super spiritual feelings from your practice. This is really getting to the heart, I think, of diligence. Diligence is a steady, even practice. It really means that you are not tossed about by the ups and downs of your feelings when you practice. You have to let go of those expectations. and just sit and practice. So next, I thought we would talk a minute specifically about shamatha. So this section is specifically about shamatha, or calm abiding meditation. This is, in most cases, the first kind of meditation you learn when you come to Columbus KTC or to Buddhism. It often has a lot in common with many of the meditation practices taught anywhere you may find them these days. So when we do shamatha, we rest our attention on our breath. We have various techniques for trying to anchor that attention to our breath, but we often find our attention has wandered. And when we notice that our attention has wandered, we bring our attention back to the breath. Now, there are several traps we can get into when we do this. First, we can fall into the trap of charging that moment in which we notice that our mind has wandered. We charge that moment with certain emotions. Maybe it's guilt because we feel like we did something wrong, we failed. Maybe it's frustration because maybe you're thinking, oh, I thought I was a better meditator than this. Or, you know, maybe it's like, oh, this was a waste. My mind's been gone for 5 minutes, something like that. And each time we notice our attention wander, if we're packing that moment with emotion, we may be adding to a story. We may be busy building a story that we tell ourselves we're bad meditators. Or maybe we get defensive because we think, oh, that was a really important thought I just had. I'm really glad I had that. That was a really good idea for work. I think that would, we can let that one slide. And so you know, whatever we do in that moment, if we're packing emotion around that, then we could be falling into a little bit of a trap. So whatever emotions may arise when we're doing shamatha, they are just like the distracting thoughts. As a matter of fact, emotions are just thoughts, right? So when we have those emotions, we lightly notice them and we let them drop as well, just like we do with our distracting thoughts. We let them drop and place our attention back on the breath. So remember how we talked about letting go of expectations? If we come into shamatha with a bunch of expectations, we may find ourselves meditating as if our meditation is a performance. The more we are able to keep our attention without wavering, the better our performance. But remember, there's a reason we call this practice, right? This is not performance. This is practice. Judging our shamatha by how few times our mind wanders also shows a fundamental misunderstanding of where the work is being done in shamatha. How many times your mind wanders may be as a result of many, many different factors, but the real work of meditation happens each time you return. So when you're on your meditation cushion and an emotion arises and you drop it, that's practice, right? That's practice for when you're off the cushion and emotions arise and you drop them. So it's the dropping of that thought, the distraction, the emotion. That's the heavy lifting of shamatha meditation. So, you know, when you practice shamatha, the meditation muscle you're building is the awareness that sits outside of the tumult of your thoughts. So you work that muscle each time your awareness has the opportunity to recognize that your attention is not where you want it. and that returning develops the habit of dropping unhelpful thoughts and emotions. So don't worry about how many times your mind wanders. Rejoice in the opportunity to build your meditation muscles by returning your attention each time it does. Now, that doesn't mean we should try to create distractions or something like that. The fact is, the fewer and fewer over long periods of time as we become more experienced at shamatha, the distractions will get more and more subtle, and we learn the more subtle awareness to deal with that. But absolutely, don't charge that moment where you experience distraction or negative emotions. Don't cling to that. Don't build a story around that. Just gently let it go and gently return to the breath. No need to beat yourself up about it. All right, so let's talk about when we move beyond shamatha. For those of you who have different practices, Vajrayana practices, remember the third yana or vehicle, Vajrayana, indestructible vehicle. So we have many Vajrayana practices. Calm abiding meditation, shamatha, is a fantastic and necessary practice, and it can bring great benefits to our minds over time. It helps us to get distance from the raging confusion of our minds and view the upheaval with a bit of distance. And as we develop that little bit of distance, we learn to let go of the emotions that are roiling. We learn how to drop the storyline and stop adding fuel to our difficult emotions. Over time and with practice, our minds can begin to settle. But we know from the teachings of our teachers that meditation can go so much further than just calming our minds. Meditation is our tool for increasing compassion and wisdom so that we can uproot the cause of suffering, our ego clinging. One metaphor I read a long time ago and sticks with me is if you think about the task of getting rid of your ego clinging as this great tree in front of you, and you've got to chop down that tree. And our tool to chop down that tree is an axe. But when we first begin to recognize that we need to chop down that tree, our axe is very dull. We don't have the tools of the sharpened mind necessary to really make progress on that tree. So shamatha in this metaphor is sharpening our axe. If we try to skip the shamatha step and go straight to chopping down the tree, we're going to really struggle. But if all we ever do is spend our time sharpening our axe, then that tree's not going to get chopped down either. So shamatha is an important first step. We won't get very far if we don't practice shamatha. But also we're selling ourselves short if we only practice shamatha. Another way of thinking about it is that shamatha loosens or reduces our kleshas, our negative emotions, but we have to go beyond that in order to truly uproot them. So there are many practices that come after shamatha, and I'm not going to talk specifically about any of them today. Because that kind of leads right into the next mistake we make in our practice. And that is, we try to design our own practice. We try to learn it from books. We don't seek out a qualified teacher to help with our practice. And this is so especially critical once you start moving beyond shamatha. I say this all the time, and some of you may have heard it before, but we are beyond blessed here at Columbus KTC to have such a thriving community. Many centers don't have a center like this. Many cities don't have a center like this. I lived in another city before I moved to Columbus, and you know, I would show up to a center for teachings, and there may be one or two other people there. And that, you know, was a full day. We didn't have the community that we have here. Also, we have lamas. We have fully qualified lamas here at Columbus KTC. We're part of a lineage with teachers, Tibetan teachers and Western teachers, and access to those teachers. Most people, when they start out with Buddhism, they start out with books, and they may say that, you know, their teacher is so and so famous author, and that's all great, that they're finding great teachings from that author, but they can't have any kind of one-on-one experience with that famous teacher and really get the guidance needed for designing their own practice. Most KTCs don't even have a resident lama, and we have not one and not two, but now three lamas. We can set up personal interviews. We can work out the practice that is appropriate for our own situation, and we can return to them as often as needed for maintenance on our practice. KTC also has a mentorship program for those who are new to the center. It's especially designed for people who have started shamatha meditation and would like to know what's next. Our mentors are trained to guide you through setting up a daily practice, setting up a shrine, starting with some of the practices beyond shamatha that people do, and just generally a good available resource for you. So if you're not working with a mentor or lama, I encourage you to do so. I'll end this section by relaying a story told to me by someone here at KTC. He had begun the Nundro practice. And for those of you who aren't familiar with Nundro, the first stage of that practice involves a lot of visualizations, chanting, and prostrations. It is a very, very active practice. And this gentleman was finding it very difficult to connect to such an active practice. He longed to go back to just quietly doing shamatha, where he could feel more relaxed and at peace. Kimpo Karte Rinpoche was in town, and so he set up an interview with Rinpoche. And after explaining that he loved to do shamatha practice, but that he was having a lot of difficulty connecting to the Nundro practice, Rinpoche said, "You are addicted to peace." And of course, then gave some helpful advice for that. But that's the kind of answer you're not going to find in a book, first of all. He needed a teacher to point that out. And such a surprising answer for me. I learned a lot from that answer that he gave. Even though it wasn't me that was asking, just the fact that I heard that story opened my eyes quite a bit. There are a world of practices for developing in compassion and wisdom. And there are experienced teachers right here at Columbus KTC who can guide you to the right practices for you. Regardless of our practice, we sometimes get discouraged. I think we tend to forget that we are of the same nature as the Buddha. We have Buddha nature. All sentient beings do. Our Buddha nature is like the sun. Everything that is holding us back from Buddhahood can be compared to the passing clouds. Regardless of how cloudy it is, the sun is always there. And with the right motivation and practice, the impermanent clouds will fully dissipate so the sun can shine on all beings. And that's easy to forget. And when we forget it, it's easy to get discouraged. So we start to label. We say, I'm a bad meditator. And, we start to lose our confidence in the ability to attain any kind of realization and think, oh, that's only available to great beings, far greater beings than I am. We look at our shortcomings and we really begin to lose heart. So I want to remind you today that we all have Buddha nature. And if we just keep working with our minds, following our teachers, following the path of the Bodhisattvas, our obscurations will gradually dissipate and our true nature will shine through. We are of the same nature as those teachers that we respect. Buddha nature is limitless. Our current circumstances, personalities, identities, and physical makeup are all actually impermanent. Discouragement because we aren't where we wish we were with our practice is short-sighted because we have unlimited potential for waking up. None of the effort we put toward it will be wasted, even if we cannot see the results immediately. So if you get discouraged in your practice, look in the mirror and remember that your true nature is a Buddha. And the virtue you are accumulating in your practice now is slowly removing the confusion that keeps your true nature hidden. Maybe you've lost the joy of your practice. Take a minute right now just to rejoice in your practice. Every time you walk past your meditation cushion, pause briefly and rejoice in your practice. We've been stuck for so long in a web of suffering, but there's actually a way out. And teachers throughout the ages have said these same prayers and done these same practices, and the blessings are available to you from them. So when you look at your cushion, remember the enormity of the treasure you have found. Everyone you know, everyone you don't know, all beings are stuck in that same web of suffering. And when you look at the cushion, rejoice in the knowledge that the virtue you build on that cushion helps to free countless beings from their confusion as well. So don't forget to approach your practice with joy. The next one I'm going to talk about, Chögyam Trungpa Rinpoche, one of the early teachers who brought Tibetan Buddhism here to America, coined the phrase spiritual materialism. He saw how many of his students managed to turn spiritual practice into an ego-building endeavor. And we do tend to do that, right? Whatever our particular ego tendencies are, we bring that to our spiritual practice. Some of our practices, they include keeping up with counts. We're supposed to do a certain number of repetitions of a mantra or prostrations or various other things. And that's something you can achieve, something objective, and that hits me right in my personal ego sweet spot. Achievement. Ever the overachiever, I bring that right to my practice. Add up the numbers, achieve. Remember when we talked about motivation before? That's not really the motivation we want, right? See how easy it is to get off track? My ambition can easily cloud my motivation. For some people, it's about attainment. They want to be enlightened, and they want it right now. Trungpa Rinpoche used to say that some of his students talk about being enlightenment as though it's going to be this great ego trip, as though it will be like winning the lottery or becoming a superstar. Spiritual materialism. Other people have had an amazing experience in meditation once or more, and they're just trying to recapture that experience. They get attached to spirituality as an end in itself. It's so easy to have an affinity for the accoutrements of practice, candles and incense, statues, beads. And we end up searching out a spiritual fix. And of course, there's nothing wrong with any of those things. But if our motivation is spirituality itself, we've lost focus on benefiting beings. We're not doing this to feel spiritual. We're doing this to develop the compassion and wisdom to bring all beings out of suffering. So if you find yourself in one of these pitfalls, you know, work with your motivation on a regular basis. Spend some time maybe with the four thoughts that turn the mind to Dharma. I believe we had a recent talk on that, and you should be able to find that in videos or podcasts. Take some time to refocus your motivation for practice. Now, I've saved the best one for last. One of the fundamental mistakes we make in our meditation is not doing it. The best practice, it said, is the one you do. There are many reasons people have for not practicing. So let's address some. Number one, I'm too busy. There's a story I've come across in multiple spiritual traditions with only slight variations. A spiritual teacher, I've heard it from Buddhist teachers or a priest or a rabbi. I've heard this story in many different ways, so it's very common. A spiritual teacher is teaching and tells everyone to meditate for 20 minutes every day. And someone in the audience stands up and says, "I don't have time to meditate for 20 minutes. I'm very busy." And the teacher replies, "You're very busy? In that case, you better make it an hour." And speaking purely from the standpoint of mindfulness and mental health, we all need a break. Often, if we find ourselves too busy, it's because we're so out of practice with slowing down and relaxing that we feel guilty when we do. Being too busy can sometimes be a reflection of our priorities. It may be that we need to examine how we spend our time and see if our time management matches our priorities. I think one of the biggest hurdles we have is actually a very modern hurdle. We have constant entertainment right at our fingertips. We wake up and the first thing many of us do is turn on our phone. We live in an age of distraction. Lama Karma Drodal counsels that people do not turn on their phones until they have done their practice for the day. I know this because I asked a question where that was his answer to me. He recommends waking up early enough to practice before you need to get ready for work and sit and do your practice first thing. He says that once you have practiced in the morning, then you can go about the rest of your day happy in the knowledge that you have practiced. Sometimes the reasons for not meditating have very practical causes and solutions like this. Sometimes they can be addressed by looking at some of the other issues we've talked about, discouragement, meditation, forgetting your Buddha nature, improper expectations. But if you find yourself in a place where your practice is not what it should be, I encourage you to talk to one of our lamas about it. I hope you found some value in this. I know I did in putting it together. When we practice with the right motivation, the virtue generated from our practice is immeasurable. We can take joy that we are on the path. At the beginning of the talk, we said the refuge prayer, which includes taking refuge in our guides and companions on the path. Let us rejoice together as companions on the path in the effort that each one of us are putting in for the benefit of beings. So we have time for questions or comments. You can put them in the meeting chat, and then I will read them out so that everyone can hear your question and try to provide an answer. All right, well, if there are no further questions, I really, really would sum up by saying, when you hit that cushion each day, set your motivation. Rejoice in the practice you're about to do. Rejoice in the practice at the end, and look at your motivations, and make this a time when you really orient your practice toward benefiting beings. So, thank you all. Have a wonderful day and a wonderful week, and we will see you back here next week. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.